This is the weekend edition of Ozarks at Large for Sunday, March 11th, 2012. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Iti Agnihotri Madhokar.
Ahead, a conversation with NPR's Guy Raz about the 8th edition of the 3-Minute Fiction Contest. And with the band L1011, they're set to perform tonight at JR's in Fayetteville. Dan Kraft from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers will discuss another one of his special projects, this time about methamphetamine use in the region. And we'll also hear a song performed by the Heartless Bastards in our very own Furman Garner Performance Studio.
But first, Eric Baker works as a recruiter for Peace Corps. The organization was founded in 1961 and currently employs over 9,000 volunteers in 76 countries across the world. Baker visited the University of Arkansas campus last week from Dallas to recruit Peace Corps volunteers. During his visit, he came by KUAF's Harold and Blanchcock News Studio to talk with me about the opportunities available for anyone who's interested in promoting world peace and friendship.
Well, we are a government agency, and we send volunteers overseas to work in one of 75-plus countries in a variety of different skill areas, ranging from education to agriculture, environment, business development, health and youth and community development. And based on someone's major or work or volunteer experience, we'll place them in one of those countries.
Now, right before we started our interview, you told me that you served as a Peace Corps volunteer in Mali for 2 years. Tell us something about your experiences.
Sure. Well, I was in the business sector based on my major in finance, and so I was assigned to work in Mali in West Africa. I had never really heard of it or knew much about it, and I was there from 2003 to 2005.
Okay.
And my main assignment was working with women's groups to help them start small projects. So I was doing microfinance, and they would typically do projects like dyeing cloth, making fabric, or making soap. And I did a lot of other side projects or secondary projects, as we call them in Peace Corps, with HIV/AIDS education in schools and talking on the radio. And I did some projects with the Association of Gardeners in my village. So it's always important for Peace Corps volunteers to be flexible, to work outside of their expertise, if you will, and basically be a volunteer for the entire community.
What does it take to be a Peace Corps volunteer?
Well, as far as the application process goes, or what we're looking for in an applicant, we do look for specific degrees or work or volunteer experience, good GPAs. We're looking for people that are just motivated and willing to work under conditions of hardship if need be, in rural locations if need be, anybody that's willing to tackle the cultural barriers and language barriers that come with working in Peace Corps. So I think the ideal Peace Corps volunteer is just a motivated individual who is looking to change their perspective on life, because that certainly will come from 2 years of service in a developing country.
So how does it work, the application process?
Our website is peacecorps.gov, and that's where you would apply. There's a ton of information from videos and other information that helps people learn about Peace Corps. We're all over Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all those things. It's really cool to read volunteer blogs and look at pictures they posted and videos of their site. But the application is all online. It's a fairly lengthy process. It can take up to 12 months. And so we tell people to apply 12 months before they would like to go overseas.
What do you learn when you're volunteering with Peace Corps?
You learn who you are. You gain a new perspective on life. You see kind of how the rest of the world lives outside of, you know, the bubble that we most likely grew up in here in the States, at least. You come away with a sense of strength that you can accomplish anything. There's not going to be much harder than 2 years of Peace Corps. So knowing that you have accomplished that, I feel like I can tackle anything now.
Where can people find more information about the recruitment process?
Well, here in this area, if you're listening in Arkansas, then your recruitment office will be located in Dallas. And I'm the current recruiter for this area. So you can find us on peacecorps.gov. You can find your local recruiting office there. I'll come to Arkansas probably twice per school semester,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps once in the summer. I'll go to Little Rock, and I'll spend time here at Northwest Arkansas as well. And we post recruitment events online. So once you're there to PeaceCorps.gov, you can click on connect with a recruiter, and you can search by state and by area. So that's where you'll find recruiting events that I'm hosting.
Okay. Thank you so much, Kurt.
You're welcome. I appreciate it.
Kurt Baker is a returned volunteer and recruiter for Peace Corps.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Ithi Agnihotri Mazhalkar.
And now with us in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Dan Kraft. He is special project reporter for the Morning News of Northwest Arkansas.
It's Northwest Arkansas newspapers these days, but yeah.
That's right. Okay.
It goes by many names.
Yes. And from time to time, you come in to tell us about a special project that's going to be in the paper. There's one that's in today's Sunday edition.
Yes.
Methamphetamines.
And all the many changes we've seen in meth use and meth production in our region over the past 10 or 15 years, it's not what it once was.
Well, it's been around for a while.
Yes.
So what is different?
Everything from the production methods to the source of the meth itself. Law enforcement efforts have changed. Rehab is different than it once was. Even cleanup efforts have some new innovations.
Such as?
Well, for one thing, a total lack of money compared to what there used to be for cleanup. The DEA money that was nationally set up years ago for cleanup of these full-size labs that were in a house or a hotel room sort of dried up, and the local folks either had to eat the cost themselves, and this can be a very pricey situation. They got a little creative. Some of them went for EPA Superfund money.
Hmm. Because it was a contaminated site,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. But you used to have to just do a complete scrub down and sometimes even a tear down of these places. Now there are neutralizing chemicals.
Hmm.
You can almost fog or spray a place down and get the residue off the walls, the carpeting, the entire area.
You mentioned there's differences in production. What I have always kind of known about meth production is that it could be done relatively inexpensively and basically mobile.
It's getting more and more mobile. In the early years, it was almost a chemistry lab set up in a kitchen or in a hotel room often because if you got busted in the hotel room, they couldn't seize the property.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you got busted at your house, they could take your house.
I see.
And there were several very flammable, very explosive components to it. However, these days we're seeing something called shake and bake or one pot method,
mm-hmm.
where you can take that entire lab, it's condensed into essentially a 2-liter bottle. The whole thing just sits there and cooks in a 2-liter bottle. We actually had someone busted trying to grab all the ingredients at Walmart and cook it as he walked through
the
store.
I remember that. Yes.
There was someone trying to manufacture meth inside.
Inside the store, yeah. Walking around waiting for it to finish reacting and cooking out.
If it is this inexpensive and relatively easy, if you know what you're doing, to do, how does law enforcement combat it?
Well, they take two approaches. One, you've got to have pseudoephedrine, which is in the cold medicines or allergy medicines very commonly, simply because if you need it for your allergies, it is about the only very effective ingredient out there.
And that's why there are certain medicines that if I'm trying to buy for my cold or allergy, I have to go through the whole process of showing ID and signing.
The ones that have the pseudoephedrine in
right.
it, yes. And you can only buy so much of it in a given time span or you'll be flagged as well.
Hmm.
That's getting harder for them to find, but this new one-pot method doesn't require as much, doesn't produce a lot of meth. It's more for personal use than for massive distribution. You're not cooking huge amounts. It's not particularly pure
mm-hmm.
by meth standards, but it's quick, it's easy, and if it doesn't explode on you, it's got a lot fewer risks than a full-size lab.
Is this one-pot mixture, is it as addictive as I understand?
It turns out the same kind of meth.
Huh.
But it is also very, very explosive, the chemical reaction is. So if you were in an old full-size lab and something got knocked over, something popped, you ran out, you let the trailer burn down, you just left the hotel room. If this explodes in a 2-liter bottle, it's probably right next to you. You're holding it. You end up with chemical and thermal burns that are pretty nasty, and that even that is driving up some costs. They tend to cost more than even regular burn victims do if they hit the hospital because they're also generally uninsured.
Any idea, is meth a bigger problem now than it was before in Northwest Arkansas?
Well, we spent some time talking to Asa Hutchinson, who, as you know, was a former member of Congress from Northwest Arkansas and then was head of the DEA. I believe he started in 2001 as meth was really ramping up as an epidemic across the country. You were still seeing full-size labs. It was still a very rural problem because of some of the smells associated with it made it easier to find in town. It seems to have leveled off into a fairly constant, fairly steady number of users, you know, amount of drugs, etc. It's not expanding rapidly like it was about a decade ago. Mm-hmm. One thing that has sort of fallen off the radar, farms, agricultural uses, and large plants like Tyson plants, they used ammonia for refrigerant or for fertilizer, were getting knocked over left and right. People were stealing the anhydrous ammonia because they needed it to mix the meth.
Hmm.
This new method doesn't require that addition. The chemical reaction makes it itself. You're not seeing ammonia thefts anymore.
But it's still being made.
And what's not being made is coming from super labs in Mexico. Larger, higher quality, cartel-driven quantities.
So whereas, correct me if I'm mistaken, whereas perhaps 10 years ago, much of the meth that was available in this region was perhaps made here, now?
Now you're seeing, if it's not somebody doing the one-pot method for small amounts, anything that's a distribution level or a trafficking level, yes, is coming from the super labs out of Mexico. Now, the Mexican Army did recently make a huge bust down there, 15 tons of meth and ingredients. They said, our local law enforcement type said that that won't really put a dent in the supply here, although it might drive the price up.
All right. And this is all in today's paper.
It is. This is something that we'd collaborated on for over the course of a couple of months. Myself and Chris Freiberg, who's our court reporter in Fayetteville, put this one together.
Is it ever weird putting this together? I mean, did you try to talk to anyone who
is
It was a little hard to find. It's a little hard to find those people because they tend to be a little paranoid of the
right,
press.
Right.
We did talk to a former user about the addictive qualities of meth. She was not as familiar with the one pot method as she's been clean a while, and this is not a brand new development, but more a recent one. The full size labs we do still see occasionally are usually from a long term cook who simply knows that method, is familiar with it, and hasn't switched over.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Appreciate it, guys.
Dan Kraft is special project reporter for Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Great. Yesterday, the NPR program Weekend All Things Considered began the 8th edition of its contest, 3-Minute Fiction. The concept is simple, very simple. Listeners are given a first line, then can use no more than 600 additional words to complete a short story. Guy Raz is the host of Weekend All Things Considered, and I recently asked him what he's learned from the previous 7 versions of this short story contest.
Learned is to manage our time very, very carefully because we've had over 7 rounds, Kyle. We've had almost 40,000 original stories submitted to us, and you can imagine I can't do a back of the envelope calculation quickly enough. But that's a lot of reading. 3 minutes times 40,000 stories. So we've also, in all seriousness, we've learned that the best challenges in previous rounds have been the ones that allow listeners to take the story in wildly different directions. So, for example, we had one round. It was a great round. Michael Cunningham was our judge, the novelist Michael Cunningham. And his challenge was that each story had to begin with a line, "Some people swore that the house was haunted." Mm-hmm. It was great. We got amazing stories, including the winning story, Roosts, by a fellow named Zach Brockhaus. The problem was that almost all the stories were about haunted houses. So this time around, we worked with our judge, Luis Alberto Urrea, who is also a wonderful novelist, author of The Hummingbird's, Hummingbird's Daughter. And he has thrown out a challenge that we think does the trick.
One thing that I've noticed in the previous seven rounds is how fun it sounds the judges are how much fun it sounds like the judges are having.
And you can't imagine how much fun we have doing it. I mean, we are a small staff for a national radio program. We have six people who put on 2 hours of radio every weekend, and we love what we do, and we work hard. But, you know, we've got to cover everything from Iran to Congress to, you know, to faith and religion to sports and everything in between. And 3 Minute Fiction is something that is really a labor of love for all of us and for the judges who have appeared on the program in the past. I mean, we've had amazing novelists, Ann Patchett and Michael Cunningham and Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. In this round, Luis Alberto Urrea. I mean, you know, Pulitzer Prize winners and National Book Award winners. I mean, incredibly gifted, talented writers who are essentially coming on, reading through stories that we sort of pass along to them because they can't obviously read. We get 5,000-6,000 stories around. And that author is then offering up advice to the winning story. And the winners in the past have not been, these are not professional writers. These are ordinary listeners. These are ordinary Americans who just decided, you know, I can write 600 words. I can write a story that can be read in under 3 minutes. And that's what's been happening.
You know, I think there are two kinds of people. People who hear 3 minutes, 600-word limit and are incredibly intimidated, and then the people you mentioned who hear 3 minutes, 600 words and say, caution to the wind, let's just try.
Yeah, absolutely. And the idea behind limiting it to 3 minutes, or I should say 600 words, because some of the stories, when they're read, are 3 minutes and 5 seconds or 3 minutes and 20 seconds, is that I wanted something that was doable. You know, I wanted when I started the contest almost 3 years ago on Weekends and All Things Considered, I wanted a way for listeners to feel like they were really contributing to the show in a very substantive way, where they could feel like, you know, this is a show I listen to, but it's also a show that I create content for, and that's really what's happened. I mean, we have received tens of thousands of these stories, and I think in part because a lot of people, yeah, there are definitely people who are intimidated by the idea of writing original fiction, but I think there are a lot more people who say, you know, I can do 600 words, I can write that, I can take an hour and try to crank something out, and the vast, vast majority of people who submit stories have never written anything, have never been part of a writing competition, and that's not really the idea. The idea isn't, you know, to find the next Hemingway. It's really to sort of find, just to sort of get people excited about writing and about their own creativity. And also, you know, to sort of feel like they're part of our program. Because here I am, I'm talking to you from Washington, D.C., behind a microphone. I don't get a chance to meet our listeners all the time because I, you know, like a lot of folks who listen to the program, I'm a parent, I've got kids, and I'm taking them to school, and I'm dealing with school lunches, and then I'm hosting the program, and I'm doing interviews with politicians, and this is a way to connect to listeners unlike almost any other way I could think of, and that's really what we love about it. It is such an interactive give-and-take competition that not just gets us excited, but gets people who listen to the program excited.
And finally, I can't imagine a better judge. Luis was in Fayetteville 2 years ago, gave several readings while he was here over the course of 2 or 3 days. Standing room only, people loved him here.
Oh, he's an amazing writer and an incredibly visual writer. You know, he's the kind of writer that takes you to a place. You know, we had him on the program last year, and he mentioned something really interesting. You know, he said, as he gets older as a writer, he finds that he wants to take his readers to a dreamlike place. And that's sort of a part of how he approaches his writing. So this round, he gave us this very cool challenge. Each story has to begin like this. She closed the book, placed it on the table, and finally decided to walk through the door. And everyone, you know, listening in Fayetteville and beyond and all over the country, take that line and go forth. Write your story. Take us somewhere.
We look forward to the results. Thank you, Guy.
Kyle, thanks so much.
Guy Raz is the host of Weekend All Things Considered, heard Saturday and Sunday afternoons at 4 on KUAF. The 8th edition of the 3-Minute Fiction Contest was launched yesterday on the program. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, March 11th. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Iti Agnihotri Matholkar.
We're pleased to have Becca Bacon-Martin, who is the features editor of Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, with us.
I have bad news.
Oh no. We don't like bad news.
I'm not going to New Orleans for spring break.
And New Orleans is just about your favorite place on the planet.
But I'm going in June, and spring break coolness will happen here.
Okay. All right.
So let's plan ahead for that.
All right.
Okay.
So we're planning ahead for spring break.
Yes, not New Orleans.
Okay.
We'll start planning for that in a couple of weeks.
Yes.
All right. Arts Life Theater in Fayetteville has a musical theater camp that runs the entire week, March 19th through 23rd, for ages 9 to 12, and Create a Play for ages 5 to 8 also runs the entire week. Northwest Arkansas Community Creative Center, one of the coolest places in the world if you've never been there, at the Nadine Baum Studios.
I've been there. Mm-hmm.
Has Paint Round, Paint Square for ages 5 to 7, again the 19th through the 23rd. Blast Off with Puppets for ages 8 to 12, 19th through the 23rd. Youth Pottery Wheel for ages 10 to 16 all week. And Nature's Hideout, a clay class for ages 5 to 7 all week.
That's all taking place at the Creative Center.
Yes. The Fayetteville Public Library has a Spring Break Movie Festival.
Well, that's nice.
Which, you know, you can run right across the street.
Yes,
too.
You can.
So you don't have to be under.
Well, I think that if we act childlike, they'll let us
okay.
in.
Okay, all right.
They're at 2 o'clock every day that week. Happy Feet on the 9th, or Happy Feet 2, rather, on the 19th. Hugo on the 20th. Puss in Boots on the 21st. The Adventures of Tintin on the 22nd. And The Muppets on the 23rd.
There are three of those that I'd like to see, actually.
They also have a Get Your Geek On Adobe CS5 workshop for teens, a daytime lock-in for grades K through 2, a Hungry for Games Survivor Night, and an overnight lock-in for grades 3 through 5, and you can find out about all of that at the Fayetteville Public Library.
That's all at the library.
The Springdale Public Library has two movies. Mm-hmm. On the 19th and the 21st, Dolphin Tale at 2 o'clock on the 19th and Puss in Boots at 2 o'clock on the 21st. Have you seen Puss in Boots?
I've seen commercials.
Hilarious.
I've just seen the cat making eyes and Shrek, and that's the selling point.
Hilarious.
It's Antonio Banderas as the voice, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Rogers Public Library also has a Spring Break Movie Marathon. It's 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock on the 24th, and it includes Elois at the Plaza, Molly and American Girl on the Home Front, and the Jonas Brothers Concert Experience.
Yeah.
And Hobbs State Park has a Nature Exploration Day Camp Spring Break Edition that lasts all week. And don't forget the Bella Vista Library, which has a Spring Break Bonanza on the 22nd from 10:30 to noon with crafts for kids and their families.
So. I loved a library before it was cool.
Do you want to do stuff for this afternoon, too? A little reminder?
Oh, of course.
We can do that.
Okay.
Not all of us have spring break off. Some of us need something to do today, yes.
Okay, so we'll do some things today. Last day of the 150th anniversary commemoration of the Battle of Pea Ridge. That lasts until 3 o'clock today. It's $5 per adult or $10 per vehicle to get in the park. There are infantry and artillery demonstrations and a cavalry program.
Cavalry.
Always have trouble with it. There's a class in abstract expressionism from 1 to 5 at Crystal Bridges. $45 for that.
A class into what?
Hands-on. Learning to do abstract expressionism.
Okay.
Should be fun. Mm-hmm. There's a show called American Spirit, part of the Live on Stage in Northwest Arkansas series. It's a montage of moments, memories, and music that embody the American spirit, presented Broadway style. 2 o'clock today at the Air and Art Center in Bentonville. Tickets are $30 for adults. Mm-hmm. We've Got Talent at 2 o'clock at the Eureka Springs City Auditorium. It's a fundraiser for Carroll County Young Musicians.
Right.
Tickets are $5 to $10. There's a Civil War era books program at the Fayetteville Public Library at 2 o'clock with Jason Dean from Crystal Bridges. an artist reception for the Photography Club of the Ozark Spring Show. That's from 2 to 4 today at the Backyard Framer in Harrison. And it's the last day of the Outsiders at Arts Live Theater, 2 and 7 o'clock on their second stage. Tickets are $6 to $8. And there's a roller derby match tonight.
A bout, I believe they call it, right? A bout. Yes.
Their Exhibit B team versus the Mountain Gateway Sisterhood of Steel. 6 o'clock at the Starlight Stadium in Fayetteville, and tickets are $5 to $15. I'm not done yet.
Oh, my gosh.
Carlos Mencia is here tonight at the UARC Bowl. The 7:30 show is sold out, and they've added a 10 o'clock show. Tickets are $25 at uarcbowl.com. And the instrumental rock duo L1011, passing through on their way to South by Southwest, is playing tonight at the Lightbulb Club in Fayetteville. The show will start around 9, and tickets are $5.
And they are coming up.
Yes.
Cool. On the show today.
Yes.
Perfect.
And we'll be there tonight.
Yes, we
Some
will.
Of us are incredibly excited about L1011 being
are.
In town.
$5? Okay. Really?
I know. Yeah, it's great.
You'll explain it to me when we get off the air, right?
Yes, we will.
Yes, we will.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Bacon-Martin is the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Iti Agnihotri Matholkar.
It's not Thursday, but with us on Sunday morning is Jody Beznoska. She's Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center. And we asked you to come back Sunday today because last weekend you guys unveiled the whole new Broadway series.
We did. We had a party. It was
you
fun.
You did. Literally, you had a party.
We did. We had a great party. It was a riot, and we're very happy to be able to announce this lineup. It's a new way of announcing it. And normally, we just sort of put it in the mail and hope our subscribers are excited. But this year, we decided to launch it in a special event where nobody knew what the shows were until they actually went into the theater and watched the show. Mm. And we had Seth Rudetsky, who is the Broadway SiriusXM show host, and also a writer and singer and producer from New York. He came and he custom built a show to launch and announce our season.
So he had the elements of the shows that you have included.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, he basically took, you know, the 9 shows that we were putting out there. He went out there and searched for video clips and trivia and all of the little things behind the scenes about them. And then he built them into a 60-minute show and revealed them one by one.
So the folks who were in the theater saw this show that nobody else on the planet will ever see again.
Exactly.
Well,
yeah.
That's cool.
That's exactly right. And it devolved into something really fun. You know, he was dropping hints and people were guessing what the show was.
Oh, nice.
And he had video up there and he played the grand piano. He brought people up for a Name That Tune. It was a lot of fun. I think it was an experiment for us to try to launch the season that way. I would say it was definitely successful. So.
Well, let's go chronologically.
Yeah, let's
do
it.
With the season, you start with a big ogre.
Yes, we do. A big green guy. Shrek the Musical will be here in October 30th through November 4th in 2012. I think the best thing to say about Shrek the Musical is that it's similar to the movie in that kids will giggle and love it, but it also has those sort of adult jokes that you will remember as well.
The next one, the one in December, I think I'm going to not have to go, but if you ask my wife what her favorite movie ever is, the answer may change between 2 or 3 movies, but one of those 2 or 3 is Billy Elliot.
Yeah.
She loves that movie.
Everybody tells me it's a wonderful play. It really inspires you and makes you happy and proud and all of that. So that's going to be in December 4th through the 9th. And so that's going to be a great sort of pre-Christmas show.
And in January.
In January.
Have you seen this movie?
I have. I love it.
I really enjoyed it as well.
It
was just on TV a couple weeks ago. Oh. And I caught it and I went, oh, this is actually really fun. So Catch Me If You Can. It's based on the story of Frank Abagnale Jr., who is a real life guy who was a con man, I guess, for lack of a better term. Basically, he forged thousands of checks, and that was how he bankrolled this life where he masqueraded as a pilot and a surgeon and a lawyer without any of the training or any of the skill.
And if you were to ask me what 3 people in my life I don't want to be lying about what they can do, it's a pilot, a surgeon, and a lawyer.
Yeah. Exactly. But he didn't really lie about being the lawyer. Well, if people haven't watched the movie,
yes, right,
kind of.
Right.
Okay, but
And we are hopeful, actually, that Frank Abagnale himself will actually come down and be here for the beginning part of the run. That's going to be in January of 2013. So that will be right after the new year.
And then if people enjoyed Million Dollar Quartet, they're going to love Memphis, which is a Tony winner as well. And that's coming in February.
Man, Memphis is such a good show. Mm-hmm. I've seen it live, and I've also seen it in the movie theaters when they did a live broadcast of it. And what I love about Memphis is Memphis is an all-new original musical. All the songs are new. You're not going to have heard them before. It's not a jukebox musical. It's not, you know, a revival of an older musical. This is brand new. And it is so beautiful and so well done. It's got incredible music, great dance numbers. The story is charming. It's basically there's a white DJ and he wants to play black music. And this was before you did that. Mm-hmm. And he falls in love with this incredible young singer who's trying to start her career. And they try to figure out how to work through this, you know, how to have a life together in this time where that really wasn't okay. So that's going to be in February 5th through the 10th in 2013.
Anything Goes?
Yeah, Anything Goes is wonderful. Anything Goes is a revival. It's produced by the Roundabout Theater Company, which is one of the few nonprofit Broadway houses. So most Broadway shows come out of commercial theaters in New York, where those are for-profit entities, and it's done in the traditional investor model that, you know, to get a Broadway show done. Roundabout is a nonprofit, so they do things a little bit differently. Okay. And Anything Goes is. Best way I can think to describe it is it's just classic. You know, it's
if you like Cole Porter, mm-hmm. if you like Fred Astaire, if mm-hmm. you like Gershwin, that
yes,
sort of
absolutely.
Era.
Yes. I don't know if anybody can really say what the story of Anything Goes is, but the setting is on a cruise ship. And there's hijinks that ensue on the cruise ship. But I believe that Anything Goes was created as a vehicle for a way to take these great Gershwin and Porter songs and put them in a show. So in some cases, the narrative of the show kind of goes, wait, what? Why are we singing this again? Does not matter. Right. It is so beautiful and so lush and sumptuous. I mean, the tap dance numbers alone are worth the price of admission. So that's in April of 2013.
And then the series proper will end in May with a play that has been around the world, War Horse.
Yeah, War Horse. Pretty remarkable that War Horse is coming here. I mean, I think the biggest cheer went up in the Walton Arts Center offices when we learned that we finally managed to book this. War Horse is a play with music. So it's not a musical. It's not a song and dance show. It's a play, and it's based on a children's book about Joey and Seth, who are a horse and his boy, and they, you know, grow up together, and then the horse gets sent off to war. And that's the premise of it. But what is so incredible about the show is that the horses and the animals are puppets. But they are huge, life-size puppets, and they're created by a company called Handspring Puppet Company. I believe they're out of South Africa. They focus on breathing. They focus on the small movements that make puppets come to life.
So that's the sixth play in the Broadway series. Now,
correct.
There are three others that are kind of on the periphery.
Yeah. The way this works is if you're a current Broadway subscriber, right now this is the time where you can renew your subscriptions. So if you came to the Broadway season this past year or right now, now's the time for you to say, yes, I want to sign up again for next year. And once you sign up for the six-show lineup that we just went through, you have access to add tickets to three other shows that we've booked. One is we're going to be mounting the new tour of Stomp.
Best reason ever to have trash cans in the venue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Fantastic. But that will be in September. Then in February of 2013, we'll have a couple of performances of Hair.
Now.
Yes.
I seem to recall that the original Broadway run of Hair involved nudity.
Yes.
Will there be nudity with this one?
I believe there will be. It's very, it only happens for a little bit and is very artistic.
Of course.
Consider yourself duly noted, duly warned. And then the final sort of special that we have is another new show that we are pretty thrilled to be presenting. It's American Idiot, which is based on the Green Day album of the same name. So that's the lineup. You can call the box office and we're calling it pre-order. So basically, you can indicate your commitment to the season, but we won't be able to seat you until later in May.
You're in the queue.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And you're at the front of the queue if you do it now. So.
Right. And that's by going – do you have to – you can do that online or should you call?
You should call. Okay. We're hopefully going to have it up online very, very soon for renewing people. And then online for new subscriptions won't be until May. So if you want to get sort of pre-ordered, you should give the box office a call, which is 443-5600 or just if you need to get more information about the shows, you can go to walnutcenter.org.
Thank you, Jody.
Thank you.
Jody Biznoska is the Vice President of Communication for Walter Knott Center.
The two-man group L1011 will drive into Fayetteville sometime today after playing in Hot Springs last night. The instrumental duo has made quite the road trip to get here, leaving their hometown of Los Angeles by car on Thursday. They'll play at JR's in Fayetteville tonight, bringing a 16-pound twin-neck guitar, drums, and various looping equipment with them. Thursday afternoon, as they left L.A., Ithy and I reached Christian Dunn and Tim Fogarty. They're L1011. We talked to Christian first, and he explained how the band formed.
How did L1011 come together?
Oh, I wish it was a really entertaining story, but Tim and I met at a fight club, and that's about all I can say about it. It's just not that entertaining because I can't tell the story.
Because any more would be breaking the rule, right?
Yeah. No, the truth is we were in a band together. That it was a four-piece band that it just didn't work out. But I really liked Tim's playing. I liked that he played electronic drums, and he made me laugh a lot. So when I knew I wanted to form L1011, I called him up to see what he was doing, and here we are, almost 10 years later.
The name L1011 has an aviation background?
Yeah, that's me. I'm a helicopter pilot, and the name of the band is in reference to an old passenger plane.
Which is quite interesting because when I am on a plane, and I don't mind flying, but I hate turbulence, and when I start to experience any kind of turbulence, I put your music on my headphones.
And the song is My Only Swerving.
Right.
Oh, God, it's totally ironic, yet not ironic. I don't know. I don't even know what to make of that.
It's so calming to me. Is My Only Swerving, what is the inspiration for that song?
That's actually nothing to do with flying. It's as a lot of people like to say, a shout out or a dedication to my favorite poet, believe it or not, William Stafford. He wrote a poem called Traveling Through the Dark that for me is probably the best poem ever written or something. And My Only Swerving is a line from it. So it's, a dedication to him, which is, it might be the first song that was ever dedicated to a poet before. Definitely the first instrumental song, I think.
Well, if we're going to talk about shout-outs, there's a song on your latest CD that's kind of a shout-out to Ian MacKay.
Yeah, that's right. he was right. that's about, a couple things. One, there was an old Fugazi song where he sings, or at least I think it was him who sang it. It might be the other guy, Guy or whatever his name is. But anyway, the lyric was, "I hate the sound of guitars." And while he's singing that, he's playing a guitar. But I understand, at least I think, what his sentiment was of just being kind of tired of hearing the same stuff over and over. So it was that, and also they were doing the DIY thing long before it was. I won't say easy to do now, but it's much easier to do now than it was then. And that's what his being right was about. So we've been doing things on our own. On our first record, we were signed, but we found that after that, when we started doing things on our own, things got a lot better, and we're better at it than we thought than our record label. So we started our own label and started doing it ourselves. So that's what that song title is about.
Because, when Ian MacKay was with Fugazi, I mean, they were, like you said, the originators of doing it on their own and doing it the way they wanted to do it.
Yeah, and they were well known for that and outspoken about it, which I thought was great. That was a really big inspiration, and I took a while for it to sink in for me because I've been doing this a long time, and I've had 7 record deals, I think, when I last counted. And none of them seemed to particularly work out that well. But when we started doing L1011 stuff on our own and having our own label, that's when things took off. So I was like, ah, see? He was right, that crazy guy from D.C.
Now, being an instrumental band, how easy or difficult is it? You just talked about your influences. And, you know, a lot of people might say, there are no words. I don't get it. Where does the music come from? What were they thinking when they were composing the song? What is it like for you?
You know, I really don't think it's any different from someone who's writing music with lyrics. I mean, you know, Beethoven would write music about something or dedicated to somebody or inspired by somebody or something. And it's the same thing. The only way people really will know what those influences were for those songs or what the dedications were or whatever is by this, by, you know, us being interviewed, I guess, unless it's one of the song titles that's really obvious. But so I don't really think it's that different. And in a way, it maybe opens things up to people more because there aren't lyrics. Like, we have a big followings overseas in other countries where people, you know, their main language is not English. So they're not stopped by English lyrics.
The first time I heard your music was in the documentary about the font, Helvetica.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I went to Google as soon as the movie ended, and then I went to iTunes and found you out. Have you heard of other people finding out about you through that documentary?
Yes, your story is incredibly boring. I've heard it so many times. No, so it really is. That movie was really all his movies. We've done 3 movies with him now, and every show we play, literally every show, at least one person comes up and tells us that they found out about us from Helvetica. So it's been huge for us. And I think that's part of why also we're big overseas. So those movies were successful overseas. So those have been great for us and were a lot of fun to work on because, you know, I did some original music for those films too. And I really, really like working with Gary. So hopefully we'll get to do more with him in the future, though. He says he's finished now with design documentaries. He did his trifecta and he's done. So we'll see what he comes up with next.
Now, in your shows, you're playing the double guitar. You're looping live. There's drumming. How do you do so much?
I don't know. I mean, I get asked that a lot, particularly by other musicians who say they've tried to do it and they can't pull it off. I think we just did it through sheer determination and will. I mean, when we decided very early on that we wanted to keep this just a duo, and, you know, at the beginning, the loops were pretty bad. You know, we had a lot of train wrecks. And even at some of the early shows, we'd have to just stop a song halfway through and try again because we did such a bad job of it. But, you know, we've been touring around and doing this for a while. I mean, we just kept at it and kept touring and touring and touring and touring. It's just gotten better and better at it. Now we're all right. So, I don't know. Now we're kind of used to it. But we still have our problems, though. We've just gotten better at hiding them.
That's part of the live experience, though, right?
Pardon?
Isn't that part of the live experience?
Well, yeah. You know, one of my friends said he actually likes it when we make mistakes because it's when, you know, if you're watching a tightrope walker walking across a wire that's up really high and he just walks straight across, it's not really that exciting. But if he starts to lose his balance, then that's when it gets exciting. Like, oh, my God, he's going to make it, that kind of thing. So I guess that's a pretty good analogy for what we do.
I know that Tim is the drummer, but he has written on your website that there is a particular set of drumsticks that are his favorites.
Yeah.
The Johnny Rabb Jim Keltner model.
Right.
And I don't know, you probably can't answer for him, but to the non-initiated, to the non-drummer, to the non-musician, it's hard to understand what would make one pair of drumsticks so much better than another.
I agree. I have no idea, but he's right here. Let's ask him. Hang on.
Okay, sure.
Hello.
Hello, Tim. This is Kyle and Ithy at KUAF in Fayetteville.
Hello.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. We just, I was wondering, because you mentioned on your website at l1011.com that there are Johnny Rab Jim Keltner sticks that were your favorite.
Yes.
And we admit, Ithi and I, that we're not musicians, we're not drummers, we're the uninitiated. We don't understand what could be so much better about a pair of sticks than all the others.
I know, it sounds absurd, but it's weird. It's like just everything about them, like the length, the thickness, the way they feel. It's just the way they feel, really, is what it boils down to. And there are, like, subtle differences between certain sticks. I found something that's suitable, but it's not quite the same. It's a little bit heavier. Like, the ones I use now are a little bit heavier. So, when they're, like, worn down, the ones I use now, when they're worn down, feel exactly like the other ones did. But, you know, they don't feel like that when you buy them new. So, yeah, there's this weird little things about sticks that kind of just feel the way they feel. And,
is there excitement for you and Christian when you start a new tour, or is there a little bit of, you know, it is, after all, a vocation, a job?
I guess there's very little of that, like, size. It's kind of more, like, exciting. Maybe a little bit of nerves because we're trying to play some new stuff that we don't quite have together. Or there's, like, new production stuff, like, you know, lighting and stuff like that, video that we've been taking out sometimes that sometimes gives us knots in our stomach because we don't quite have them down. You know, you get that kind of stuff down a few weeks, a week or so into a tour or whatever, but, like, when you first leave, you're just like, ah, this first one's going to be rough, most likely. So anyway, but I know me personally, I don't ever, like, dread going on tour. I kind of love it.
All right.
And once you leave, you're, you know, it's kind of cool.
Then you're in the flow.
Like,
right.
No matter what you had forgotten at home, you're not getting it, so.
Right. Right.
So you just got to live with it.
Ithi, you had a question for Tim?
Now, you've been compared over and over again to Rat-A-Tat and Sigur Rós. Who would you rather be compared to?
Out of those two, or in general?
In general.
You know, I don't know. People compare you to people hear things that I don't necessarily hear, so it's kind of hard to say. I would, like, the sort of arrogant musician answer would be, like, to say nobody, but I get why people make those comparisons so people can kind of get a better idea of what a band sounds like without actually hearing them. But, I mean, really, it just boils down to listening to it. And, you know, it sounds like what we sound like. And those guys sound like the way they sound.
Well,
so, but I get it. You know, I get the comparison.
Finally, when you play at the Lightbulb Club on Fayetteville, that Sunday night show, there will be some of us in the crowd who are very familiar with your music, some who are not. Does it matter to you whether you have an audience that is more likely to know your music ahead of time or less likely?
I guess it really doesn't matter because I don't really think of it. But it's people that know it is kind of cool because they'll say songs and they'll kind of, like, request stuff, like when you see them before the show and ask if they're playing that. But it's also cool if people haven't heard it just because, you know, when you talk to them at the end of after the show or something, it's like, well, it sounds like there's more than two people doing that, or, you know, or there's the people that are in between that kind of know the music but don't know it's really two people doing it. So, yeah those people that kind of know the stuff but don't know it's done like that. And I don't know. It's all good to me. They're all there. They're all at the show. So I'm cool with that.
We look forward to you and Christian playing L1011 at the Lightbulb Club. And
This Sunday.
Thank you very much. Thanks for calling.
All right. Tell Christian we said goodbye.
All right. We will.
Tim Fogarty and Christian Dunn are L1011. They play tonight at JR's in downtown Fayetteville.
This past Thursday, the Austin, Texas band Heartless Bastards visited the Furman Garner Performance Studio for, well, a performance and a conversation with Ozarks at Large's Katie Hendrickson. We heard the conversation and one song on Friday's edition of Ozarks at Large. What we did not hear was this song that's coming up. It's called Skin and Bone.
This is the one that I got the first couple lines when I was driving through Arkansas. all right, cool. 1, 2, 3, 4...
3/4 of the band Heartless Bastards recorded inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio on Thursday before they played a show that night at George's Majestic Lounge in downtown Fayetteville.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM Fayetteville, a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences, pursuing peace through education at arkansas.edu/Fulbright.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Ithi Agnihotri Mudholkar.
And we should point out that beginning with this edition of Sunday Ozarks at Large, you can find our Sunday shows also online.
OzarksAtLarge.com.
So look for that.
Yes. Thanks for listening.